Welcome back to the swamp, my friends. I'm glad to see you made it back for another episode. Today I'm going to be continuing my recent series of unsolved cold cases from the southern United States. In this series, I will be focusing on cold cases specifically in the range from Virginia, all the way down to Florida. Being a southern boy myself, I have always grown up in an area littered with odd and unexplained crimes. From people vanishing in plain sight to unsolved killings in broad daylight, the South is no stranger to violence, tragedy, and the unexplained. In this episode, I will only be covering two cases instead of the normal three. As always, if you have a case that you would like to suggest, or a state that you would like to see covered in the series, please be sure to comment those down below. Any suggestions are very much appreciated. If you have a story or would like to send in a more detailed suggestion for a case, be sure to visit swampdweller.net. Now, let us dive right into these tragic, strange, and unsolved cold cases from Alabama. Number 1. The Odd Disappearance of Daniel Barter. To begin this story, we need to jump back in time to the year 1959 in Perdido Bay, Alabama. The date was June 18th, 1959, and the Barter family, who lived in the 1700 block of Thrush Drive in the nearby city of Mobile, Alabama, were enjoying a camping trip in the Perdido Bay area. This trip consisted of Daniel Barter, his mother Maxine Barter, 3 out of 6 of his siblings, and one of his cousins. Apparently, his other 3 siblings were staying with some relatives. This campsite was not much more than an hour from their home in Mobile. Sometime between 9:30 and 10 a.m., while Daniel's parents were preparing their fishing equipment for the day, Daniel would apparently wander off from the rest of his family. At the time, he was carrying a bottle of knee-high soda around with him. Maxine Barter did not seem to notice Daniel's absence until about 10 to 15 minutes later. She began searching all over for her son, but could not locate him or any sign of him anywhere. Not long after this, authorities were called in and began a full search of the immediate area. Now, what concerns me the most is the area Daniel went missing in. Being from the state of Florida, I have grown up in swampy areas my entire life. I even used to swim in them from time to time. Stupid of me, I know. Swampy areas not only hold many dangerous critters, but they have endless nooks and crannies for someone to fall into and never be heard from again. This specific swampy area in the Perdido Bay is highly infested with alligators. The possibility of Daniel being attacked by one of these animals is unfortunately rather high. So much so that officials caught multiple alligators and cut them open, but to no avail. Multiple groups of civilians came together to search the area. They were walking shoulder to shoulder in groups of 25. They did this in a 5-mile radius of the area and combed it extensively, looking for any sign of Daniel. This massive group peaked at around 2,000 people, including 300 members of the local U.S. Navy and military bases, and over 150 law enforcement officers and firemen from Alabama, Florida, and other close states. Bloodhounds and other scents were brought in to search the area as well, as jeeps, helicopters, horses, and more. But again, nothing would be found. Not even the knee-high soda bottle was ever found. Somehow, this 4-year-old boy simply vanished into thin air, never to be seen or heard from again. Divers searched from the top of the bay down into the swampy areas, finding nothing once again. The bottom of the lake was dragged, and sinkholes and thickets were searched thoroughly. Authorities hoped that in doing this they may jar out a body that could be stuck on the bottom. Dynamite was even tossed in areas he may have fallen in as well. This sounds a bit extreme to me, but I guess I would not really be the authority on that. According to Daniel's mother, Maxine Barter, Daniel did not like the water, and she does not think he would have gone into the bay by himself. The bay was exceptionally shallow at the time. You could walk considerable distance without getting all that wet. The brush around the family's campsite was very thick and prickly. Daniel was only wearing a pair of shorts at the time, with no shoes. The Barter family does not believe he would have gone into the bushes by himself either. After over a week of tirelessly searching the area and turning up little to nothing, officials decided it was unlikely Daniel walked into the water or the woods. This was the most intensive search ever conducted in Baldwin County history at the time. Authorities began to investigate the likelihood of this situation being an abduction. They were never able to find any clues or evidence supporting this theory, though. The Barter family was not a wealthy one, and they never received any sort of ransom note or message. Making a motive of ransom, unlikely. Things would only grow to be stranger from here on out, though. According to Daniel's mother, roughly a month or so before Daniel would disappear, she claims to have seen a mysterious unknown vehicle parked in front of their house. Maxine would allegedly approach the car and attempt to confront the driver. She said a man was driving, and he immediately covered his face with a newspaper and drove off. To make this claim a bit more valid, a neighbor of the Barter family claims they saw a man acting strangely and peering into the window of the room Daniel and his brother slept in. The neighborhood was pretty safe at the time, so this was weird. The neighbor would mention this to Maxine, and they would go investigate the spot that this man had been standing. The man, of course, was gone, but he had left footprints in the dirt under the window. They would call the police, who came and photographed the footprints and took cast of them. Since this was nearly 60 years ago, it is unclear if the evidence even exists anymore. I do want to mention that even though this case is old, there is still a chance we can help progress it. While I do not have the highest hopes that justice will be brought here, I do think it is unbelievably valuable to keep the memory and story of Daniel Barter going, if only as a cautionary tale for parents of the future. The last thing I would like to mention in the timeline of strange happenings is that the morning of Daniel's disappearance, Maxine drove him and one of his brothers to the store. She parked and went inside, leaving the boys inside the car. While she was gone, an unknown man apparently drove up next to the Barter's car and stared at the boys for an uncomfortable amount of time. Then the man suddenly drove away without speaking a word to them. Daniel's brother would tell Maxine about this encounter when she returned to the car. Due to this odd sequence of events, the Barters heavily suspect that someone had been stalking the family for some time, with intentions to abduct Daniel. Unfortunately, this case would go cold and fall inactive until just recently. Nearly 50 years after Daniel disappeared, this case was reopened in 2008. This was 12 years ago, and we are still in desperate need of help to bring justice to Daniel. Many of the original case files have been lost or destroyed over the last 6 decades, making this that much harder to piece together. I have seen cases with less info be solved recently, though, so I do have faith that Daniel Barter may have his day of justice. I have found several theories online and in articles as to what happened to Daniel. I will briefly touch on a few of those theories. The main theory is, of course, that Daniel was abducted by an unknown suspect. Due to the timeline shared by the family, this is the strongest belief. A second theory, and one of the early theories of this case, is that Daniel accidentally drowned in the Perdido Bay, even though the family heavily refutes this, as he apparently did not like water, but the tides were incredibly low and easy enough for a toddler to walk a fair distance without getting very wet at all. The third theory is that Daniel may have gotten lost while walking around the area of the campsite. Since the brush was so thick, it would not be impossible that Daniel could get turned around very easily and became lost. But since the area was searched so thoroughly, this is unlikely. The fourth and final theory I will be touching on is the idea that Daniel may have been attacked and possibly eaten by an alligator. Now, this is a bit extreme, but in an area with several alligators, this is not unfathomable. Multiple large gators were hunted in the area and gutted, but no evidence of human remains were found. Sadly, Daniel's father died in 1965 and his mother followed in 1995, both never knowing the truth of what happened to their son. Apparently, all the siblings that were alive during the disappearance are still alive today. They have hopes that he is alive and still out there, and hope the case will be resolved one day. In 2009, the family returned to the campsite to remember their missing brother and dedicated a half-century mission to find him. Daniel Barter went missing from the Perdido Bay, Alabama area on June 18, 1959. He was just 4 years of age at the time, and he was last seen wearing gray boxer shorts and carrying a bottle of knee-high soda. He was just 3 feet tall and weighed 50 pounds at the time of his disappearance. His hair is brown, and so are his eyes. He has scars on his fingers and one on his tongue. His case is currently labeled as a non-family abduction, and if he is still alive, he would be 64 years old. If you or anyone may have any information on this case, please send in your tips to Baldwin County Sheriff's Office, 251-972-8589. You can always remain anonymous. Number 2. What happened to Warren Flippo Jr.? This next case is not one I would typically cover, as it has little to no details attached to it. As I got to thinking about it, though, I felt that that was an unjust mindset to have. I know personally, if I went missing, I would want someone to come to bat for me, even if information about my fate were scarce. Warren Flippo Jr. does not have all that much information or documentation about himself online. Most of the information I could find are decades-old police reports, which we will touch on in a bit. What little information I could find may be helpful to progressing this case's status, though. Warren was born on December 21, 1955. He was about 44 years old at the time of his disappearance. He was 6 feet tall and weighed 215 pounds, give or take. Warren has a long history of drug use, mainly those you shoot into your veins. He is a Caucasian male, with brown hair and blue eyes. Now, to get into the known timeline of Warren's case. The date was June 24th, 2000, and Warren Flippo was last seen driving around in his vehicle in Huntsville, Alabama. Witnesses claim to have seen a long-haired man wearing a baseball cap in the passenger seat. After these sightings, Warren would never be heard from again. Warren worked at a local Giles and Kendall cedar mill. Warren lived on a road called Gurley Pike, which upon further investigation, seems to be a rural road with neighbors being spread far apart until eventually ending in a more residential area. Warren would not be reported as missing until nearly 5 full days later. On June 29th, the same day his vehicle was found abandoned. Although Warren had a history of run-ins with the law and was no stranger to drugs, his friends and family stated it was very uncharacteristic of him to up and leave his pets at home with no food or water. Sadly, not much more is known about this situation, and this case has run cold. Warren Flippo Jr.'s disappearance is thought to have been the result of foul play. Officials strongly believe he was killed and buried somewhere in the South Madison County area. This case remains unsolved and needs any help you may have to offer. You can anonymously submit any tips or information you may have to the Madison County Sheriff's Office, 256-532-3417. Thanks for watching these strange and unsolved disappearances from Alabama. These cases are truly tragic and break my heart. I truly hope we can at the very least keep the memory of Daniel and Warren alive through this video. If any of you have any information that may help these two cases, please be sure to contact the police. If you enjoyed this video, please be sure to hit that like button. The more likes this video gets, the more YouTube promotes it to fresh new eyes. And I would say these cases deserve all the eyes they can get. If you're new to the swamp, and you enjoyed this video, why not join us? Subscribe to the channel and be sure to have your notifications on so you never miss a new video. I upload them almost every single day, and all things natural and supernatural. If you have a case that you would like to suggest for a future video or a state you would like me to cover, be sure to comment those down below. I'd love to see what you got. If you have a story or a more detailed suggestion you would like to mention, be sure to visit swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. If you're on the go and don't have YouTube Premium, but still want to listen to your favorite Swamp Dweller scary stories everywhere you go, be sure to download those for free at iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and pretty much everywhere else online you find your favorite podcast. Thank you guys, as always, for supporting the Swamp the way you do. I couldn't do this without you guys. I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video.